Stal Pontikas here, welcoming you to this edition of the Metro Show. Horse racing is a popular spectator sport worldwide, but many of us don't understand what happens to these beautiful horses after their racing career is over. And that career may only last a few years, but horses can live into their 20s and 30s. What happens to them once they leave the racetrack for the final time? We'll find out from my guest, Margot Sutter. She's the founder of Equus Rescue and Rehabilitation in Millstadt, Illinois, just across the river from St. Louis. Margot, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Stal. Great to be back. Thanks for asking us to show up again.
It's great to see you.
Thank you.
Before we get into some of the day-to-day aspects of running a horse rescue, how about if we take a few minutes so you can share your story about how the rescue began, especially for folks who have not heard your story in the past and they're joining us for the first time.
Well, thank you. Thank you for new folks joining us today. I started the rescue in 2008 into 2009. We became a 501c3, and I started it because I had a passion for horse racing, and I had race horses and was behind the scenes in Chicago when we were racing and got to be in the barns and the backside and then sit at the owner's tables and would kind of see what was going on. Some horses just all of a sudden would be shipped out without really anywhere that they were going, and then started to find out more and more about what happens to racehorses when they finish their career if their owners don't take them home and they don't have a designated spot to go to. They fall through the cracks. And then I found that it wasn't just thoroughbreds out there. It was quarter horses and Morgan horses and Tennessee walking horses, so about any type of equine. Donkeys, mules, draft horses, where do they go when their life is finished or somebody can't afford them any longer or their usefulness is gone in a human's eyes? And so it really played a lot on my head and my heart. And of course, being an owner of the racehorses and sitting there talking, the thing that I would hear from other owners would be, well, you know, somebody, it's a darn shame. Somebody needs to do something about it.
And in the case of racehorses, they're only 3 or 4 years old,
yeah.
5 years old?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Five is getting up there. Nine is really up there.
So they're still very young.
Very young, yeah. And so the somebodies were us. We were the somebodies, the owners. The owners ultimately have the call on what happens to that horse. And to shirk that responsibility wasn't acceptable to me. So I had grown up riding and, you know, had worked with my own horses and had every intention for every one of my horses to be back home with me when they finished their job, to start a new job. And I thought, why can't these other horses all have that same opportunity to start a new job? And so I started going to some of these sales at the end of the season and buying horses, that outbidding the kill buyers that would take the horses and send them to slaughter in Mexico. They'll show up at barns even now. They'll show up and they'll portray themselves to be good eggs and buying a horse for a 12-year-old kid or grandkids or going to be camp horses or things like that. And so that was quite a shock to find out, you know, what they really did do and where those horses went. They went to holding pens, and they had to be held until their numbers were large enough for the contracted amount to be shipped down to the border. And then they were left on the Texas side of the border or up toward Canada, you know, and then they would cross over to their final destination of a horrific death of slaughter. And there is no humane way of slaughtering a horse. So, and the sense of betrayal at the very end is complete and crushing, because they've been taught to work with us and be our partners. And in the end, we're the ones that turn our back on them and let them fall through the cracks to that death. And so I hope just the small amount that we're capable of doing and our voices can be heard to keep slaughterhouses from reopening in the United States, because it's a horrific practice. We don't endorse it. The meat is toxic, that because of the types of medicines that we give our horses, just the simple vaccinations, topical creams that make the meat toxic for human consumption. And they're finding that out more and more in Europe and Canada, other countries out there that receive horse meat that's been shipped from the United States, shipped from other countries that harvested horses that came from the United States. And they've been able to trace those back to cancer-causing illnesses to those animals and the way that we have treated them. So it isn't just jumping up and down and saying, oh, this is so bad and it's horrible and it's sad and it shouldn't happen, which I fully agree with. But from a more practical standpoint, for people who feel, well, you know what, there's too many animals, we should get rid of them then. You know, it's better than seeing them starve. I understand. But having opportunities of getting your horse help, you know, there's free hay locations out there. There's people you can appeal to. Other rescue organizations, of course, that, you know, across the United States, we all pretty well know who each other are. And everybody could help support the equine rescues. And it would be really appreciated because those animals can be brought in. One of the things that also has to happen is that the breeding practices have to be reined in. You know, if you look on your Facebook page in the springtime, and I'm just using this for all the folks that are out there with horses or are friends with horses, you know, everybody loves to show those sweet little foal pictures when the babies are born with their mama or just standing and they're excited. But they don't really have a plan for where that baby horse is going to go. And even if they do, what are they going to do when that baby horse finishes? A horse can live 25 to 35 years with great health. And so at my age, I'm starting to look at, okay, could I take a horse that's going to live 30 years because I'll be heading into 90, you know, by the time it finishes its life, you know? And that's true about my commitment to them. So for the young folks that are out there, there's really enough horses almost with the inventory, you guys that are out in kill pens, that are standing in someone's backyard that don't have any attention, that need that attention, that your neighbors could use help to show up if you're interested in learning about horses, you know, lend a hand, use your voice. But there's enough horse inventory out there still that I think that a newborn baby today would pretty much be okay with having a horse, with one that's born today, because that newborn baby and that horse will both be 30 years old at the same time. And so if people are more responsible with their breeding practices and an understanding of what exactly are you breeding and why, where is it going to go, what if you don't need it any longer, what's the next stop for it, or do you just turn your back and say, it's not my problem, it goes to an auction, I don't care, I let the trainer handle it, I let so-and-so handle it, I don't know, one day he just disappeared, I didn't need him any longer. Well, that goes back to our type of society we've become, a throwaway society. I'm old-fashioned, I guess. I believe in seeing things through. So if I've made a commitment to a person or an animal in their life, then I hope to honor that commitment as fully as I can, you know, Lord willing. You know, I talked to one of my good friends the other day, Gary Abelov, who's a wonderful dog trainer. It was a Gary Abelov Dog Nation. So if you guys need a great dog trainer, look him up on Facebook. And I love the way Gary trains dogs. It's clicker training, you know, reward training. Same way that I love the way Chris Cox retrains horses. Shelby Winstead learned through Chris Cox. Shelby's one of our young trainers. Stormy Mullins. These guys are true horsemen. And they understand the horse, the psyche of the horse, the communication process of the horse. And it's so opens your world up when you get to do that. And I've been talking to them since I've been a little girl, you know. So their nonverbal communication skills are off the charts great. And if you can learn the communication skills that a horse has, it changes the way you can communicate with a human and a child or anyone that is nonverbal, because their cues are so strong of what they're trying to say. I mean, how does a mom know when its baby is hungry versus needing his diaper changed? You know, so that's kind of like that same wavelength you get on with a horse. Mm. And so when Gary and I were talking, he said, you know, Margo, the life expectancy of rescuers is very short, because one day you just hit a wall and you're either so exhausted from the heinous things that you've seen in person or heard of, or the animal when it shows up to you in a severe neglect case, that eventually it's just too much for everybody. You know, too many dogs, too many cats, too many horses. And I said, well, I'm heading into 11 years now, Gary. And I said, yeah, there are days I get tired and there's days I don't understand. I can't get my arms around the magnitude of cruelty at times, the intention of a human being to hurt something so badly. And I said, yet I'll walk in that barn or I'm around those volunteers, and that level of commitment that they bring to the table buoys me up at those times where I'm at that moment to say, I'm going to call it. Because it is emotionally crushing after a while. There are sometimes you just have to walk away and stay away for a little bit to get yourself back together again and ready, recharged, basically, to go. But yet, when you're with the animals, that's all the recharging you need. Or when you walk in the barn, you see the volunteers, that's your recharging. Their passion, their excitement, the new volunteers that keep coming in. So, yeah, I started this, and it's been one of the most challenging events in my life. This isn't like opening up your dream business, guys, like you've always wanted to have the ultimate floral shop or your chocolatier or your sassy clothing person. And, you know, you've opened up the best clothing boutique out there and you're going to make it big. That's your hopes and dreams, too. And this was really not on my bucket list to ever say, oh, you know, I'm an incredible floral designer and now I'm opening a horse rescue. Wrong. Didn't happen that way. I was just like coming back from Seoul, Korea on a plane from creating a product line in the floral industry, which is really who I am, where I come from. And I just like heard was really praying because I was suffering burnout and about where's my next stop? You know, Lord, guide my feet, show me where I'm supposed to serve. And I feel like I've done about everything in the floral industry, and I just want to come home and be with my horses. And I owned two Morgan horses at the time. No race horses, just two Morgan horses. And within 2 years of coming off the plane, the horse rescue was born. I landed in a barn that was for sale. I leased part of it and started getting phone calls about, you know, I had taken in a racehorse that was broken down, and it was a racehorse that I'd known since he was just a couple of months old. That's Sir Anthony, who really is our founder. And I patched him back together with the help of Dr. Alan Mueller from Mueller Veterinary Services in Waterloo, Illinois. And Alan's an incredible equine vet and has taught me so much, as well as the volunteers, about, you know, medical care for a horse. And so it kind of began. And so Anthony was my first one. And he did not end up on the kill truck, but he was headed in that direction. And then the next one was my girlfriend, Patty Moran Bonnet from Milan, Illinois, whose husband I worked with in the floral industry, Bonnet Wholesale Florist. I was up to the Quad Cities area working and doing design programs. And Patty was a professional equestrian and instructor. And she knew about Sir Anthony, and I came home and she called me and said, there's a mare in my barn that shipped in. She's an ex-race horse. They also can take a thoroughbred and they register them as a quarter horse too, so that they can breed racing quarter horses. So they call it an appendix mare. So even though she was born a thoroughbred and registered thoroughbred, she got registered as a quarter horse mama too, to racing quarter horses. And she said, this horse fell through the cracks. I don't know who she is. This lady that owns the barn's kind of a lunatic. And she picked her up and the horse is injured. She cast in her stall, which means she ran her leg through the board, through the wall, big mare. She's injured. She's not letting me touch her. She won't let anybody get near this horse. And she has to have some money to buy this horse. And I said, if the horse is injured and she's in bad shape, just call. No, she won't let us call the veterinarian. So that ended up being Duchess, my mare. And Miss No Account was her registered name. And she was a daughter of Seattle Slough.
Mm.
And so her first child, because I did breed, I was going to, you know, it was for my racing business, but I was keeping that baby too. And he's at the farm. And so I turned it around from Miss No Account to my girlfriend, Jackie King, had registered this, rescued a beautiful thoroughbred stallion, Jackie and Joe King from Indian Hills Thoroughbred Farm. And his name was Via Reggio. Similar situation of abuse that Duchess had gone through. And because Patty fought for Duchess to get Duchess out of there, she shipped her down to me. And we had a lot to put back together because Duchess was injured badly. Gorgeous mare when we saw her after she finished gaining her weight back and getting healed up. Jackie's boy had one eye. He was found locked, had a wonderful racing career, ran at major tracks. And then they found him locked in a shed, you know, starving. The trainers told the owner that he was taking him back to the farm and was going to retire him and look after him. And the guy was a drunk and walked away and left these animals pinned up and never came back to take care of them. So Jackie rescued Via Reggio. So on account of all of that good stuff happening, Duchess coming to my life and meeting Jackie and Joe King at Indian Hills Thoroughbred Farm, meeting Via Reggio, Duchess and Via Reggio had on account of. And that's how I got his name. It's from Miss No Account to Counting. And it really left an impact on me as a potential breeder, racer, thoroughbred industry person to say, wait a minute, there's more to this than just this, you know, and where is this little boy going to go when he finishes his racing career? And it was like very clear cut to me. Well, Duchess will end her days with me. On account of will end his days with me. And I've got Sir Anthony. So I'm getting a bigger family, and here comes Cool Twist. And my friend Boo Wright rescued Twist. He was an ex-show jumper, son of Jim Twist, who was an Olympic horse. And Twisty Boo passed away 2 years ago at the age of 28. And when he was a big white hunter jumper horse, and he was marvelous, just a classy gentleman. And so that was my first kind of introduction, my first round of horses that I rescued. And then came the phone call about helping this group out, and the kill buyer had gotten these horses from Fairmount Park, and on that truck was a yearling colt and a two-year-old filly and another little mare that was protecting those two, and she was not the mama of those two. She wouldn't let anybody touch those horses. And in that mix was Little Red Ferrari, who passed away a few years ago. But she was, because she protected Little Buck, who was 1 year old, and Sassy Frass Gal, who was two. And Sassy got passed over by anybody at that sale because she had a small fracture on her left front foot, and you could see the calcification from it healing. And so people that looked at her that thought she could be either a polo horse or a hunter jumper passed over her because of that oscillate that they thought would not hold up under the pressure of sport. And she ended up on a kill truck because of that little oscillate on her foot. Buck had been stepped on or squished by other horses in a trailer, and his left front foot had a huge water bag hanging off of it. And he could barely pick his foot up to walk, and his right shoulder had a big wound, and that was a hematoma. And so there were several horses that I bought from the kill buyer that day and brought them home. And then Buck ran on, we got his papers at Christmas time, and I'm Seattle Slough, and I must, we'll meet in heaven at some point, I guess, because Buck's father was a horse named Denouncer. And his mama's name was Angels Two, and the paperwork came right before Christmas, and so I named him Let Da Trumpet Blare, just like because they walk on the track and blow the trumpet before they all come out. And I had been calling him Baby Buck or Baby Boo or Good Looking Son of a Buck, and that's how he got his nickname. His baby name is Buck, and Buck went on and ran at a national level, launching the first retirement program for racehorses in Illinois called Galloping Out. These were the throwaway horses, remember? They're the ones nobody wanted. And now we've made them whole again and gorgeous. And now they're desirable and people want them again. But they have to be the right people. And we're looking for those right people. We've had some incredible adoptions that have happened in the last year and huge success stories. Ranger, who came out of the kill pen last year in February and then was retrained by Shelby Winstead and then went on and did our first kids camp with Equine Angels, 90 days after being ready to be shipped to slaughter, has a permanent home with Dr. Julie Kelly and her daughter, Erin. And it's been a great match. He's over at Traderville Stables in Waterloo, Illinois, and Erin is and Julie are both beginning horsemen and immersing themselves into learning to ride, and have offered us to have Ranger back at any point. We need him for camp, and they'd love to have him serve as a camp horse again with our camps, and he has a lifetime home with them. And if it doesn't work out, they have an agreement that they return Ranger to us. You know, Holy Uno, who you and Kathy met on your first, I think one of your first trips. Stell's wife is Kathy Ponticus, and she's now one of our volunteers and an absolutely talented, beautiful lady with the craziest sense of humor. And so if you've ever had the pleasure of meeting Stell's wife, you're in for a ride. Stell, you've had a great life there. You know, you laugh, a lot of laughs with you too. And so Kathy comes to the barn, and she's built like a runway model. Stell's tall, Kathy's tall, willowy. And she's dancing with this horse, and he's following her dance moves. And we captured it and put it on our Facebook page. Stell videoed them to staying alive, and it was absolutely hilarious. And this horse he was too light to jump, bone density-wise. No different than racing. Bone density plays out throughout a lot of sports. You've got to have good bone density for impact sports, like jumping and three-day eventing and barrel racing and roping and reining and horse racing. All those animals have to be built like athletes and have, you don't want a leg to snap or anything. So Uno, Holy, U-N-O, Holy like Uno Cards, the Holy One, is grandson of Holy Bull, famous big gray racehorse. Holy Bull just died a few months ago, a really amazing horse. And Holy Uno came to us. And our longtime volunteers and friends, Marva and Curtis Dowdy, another hilarious couple, were caring for Uno. And Marv was putting his name. We have whiteboards outside the stalls to put the horse's name on. He had just come in. And their feeding regimen, or if they need meds or any kind of notes on the horse. So everybody reads it and knows what we need to do for each horse. So Marva calls me and she said, "That a Holy Uno horse." I said, "Yes." She said, "Spell his name for me, will you?" Holy, H-O-L-Y, Uno, like the card game, U-N-O. And she's laughing, and she said, "I thought that was right." And I said, "Why, what's wrong?" She said, "Oh, I told my husband two or three times, I told Curtis, listen, it's Holy Uno." And I walk by, and I look at the whiteboard, and it says, "Holy, Y-O-U, K-N-O-W, Holy, you know." And so we've always kind of given Kurt trouble about that, Holy, you know. And so Holy Uno went off to retrain with Shelby Winston, and we were hoping was going to be in the $100,000 makeover. We were a little bit too late to get into it this year, but we'll have another horse ready for next year. And they'll compete at the Kentucky Horse Park down in Louisville, Kentucky. So one of our rescues will be in that competition with our horse trainer. In the meantime, a young lady has fallen in love with Uno, who does the beautiful riding art form of dressage. And so she has just gotten her adoption application in, and it's approved. She has a few things left pending, like an inspection of the barn and everything. And she's over in Cloverdale, Indiana with Shelby. And so Shelby will be the liaison for us since he's there. And I'll be making a quick trip over there, take a look at everything, and sign off on the paperwork. And Uno has a permanent home. So we do need people, and we need people to pick us. We need people to pick us as a charity. Hopefully this getting toward that end of the year thing where people start to make their choices where their end of year dollars go. We hope that they'll consider us. We are a 501c3. We do have a website. It's www.equusrescue.org. Facebook is Equus Rescue and Therapy. On both sites, on our website, there is an adoption application form. There's a volunteer information form. people can go to the website and check us out. So we have a Donate Now button there as well on our Facebook page, Equus Rescue and Therapy. So if anybody's out there and they hear us, we greatly appreciate your dollars. You know where it'll go to, hey, paying the water bill, paying the electric bill, paying the farrier, paying the vet, paying the grain. And it's 100% goes back to those animals. We don't get paid there. None of us. 100% volunteer. And I cannot say enough about those folks. Our last meeting was in July. We're going to have another volunteer training day coming up. So watch our Facebook page for that. Those are fun. Our guest last month was the Midwest Farrier School. They're from Champaign-Urbana area. They work with the University of Illinois, the vet school. We do dinner at 5:30. It's usually potluck style. And we'll post up there if we need people to bring a dish or bring a dessert or what's going to be served. It's at the barn, which is 8743 LaPere School Road in Millstadt. So if you see that on our Facebook page and message us if you want to come over, 5:30 dinner, 6 o'clock, we start with the guest speaker. So I'm working on hopefully getting one of the veterinarians to come and talk about horse first aid. And then if your horse is sick, how to move quickly, identify things you can do at home to get started before the veterinarian gets there to get the process started. And having a cell phone that takes pictures and being able to text it to your vet is a life-saving event. Those are some of the things that we're doing. We have more success stories on the horses that came from Louisiana last year, end of August. Some of them are ready to go. It's taken us almost a year on some of those horses to save them, rehab them. Liza, a thoroughbred mare, we call her Miss Liza Minnelli. Liza got thrown on that truck at the last minute because they felt so sorry for her at the kill pen. And probably one of our worst starvation cases, one of our worst neglect cases. And when she got to the barn, she rode 22 hours to get to us. And she got in her stall and collapsed. And then the vet told us that every time Liza ate, she lay flat on the stall floor right after she ate her mash. We tried to walk her, and she was so weak. Some people just had to walk away. It was too hard to see. And when my baby sister, Russ Ann Sutter, she's a ER, Dr. Russ Ann Sutter, she's a ER doctor, Dr. Julie Kelly, their friends were both there at the same time. Out of that load, Julie adopted a horse and Rosie adopted a horse. We weren't even sure after we got her through all of that stall if her foot was going to be sound enough to support her. In fact, we had a farrier who quit because she felt like she wasn't making any impact and decided she was more of a nutritionist and had a differing opinion because of Liza's feet were so bad. And we had to just stay focused on what Liza was telling us, not what another human was telling us. It was a tough one because we get a lot of, are you doing the right thing? And that animal tells us if we're doing the right thing. We cannot do it without a single person out there, whether they're volunteering, whether they're bringing us a huge check, whether they're showing up to a fundraiser to buy a big farmer's breakfast for $10, the ballpark night, our big gala that'll be coming up, a barbecue that we're planning, you know, for the fall, different things, a movie night at the barn if we, you know, we're going to try to do like Seabiscuit. And yeah, so we've got some fun things like that. So how can others get involved? Go to Facebook and Equus Rescue and Therapy. Send us a message. We've got Brooke Bennett, Cheryl Moshiri, myself. We monitor that. We'll get back with you. Beth Wills is our volunteer coordinator. She'll put you on the schedule and get you trained and what we're doing. If the barn work is too physical, I don't make any bones about it. We don't ride, Stell. We're not a riding facility. We're like a hospital over there. Our point is to get them ready to go to retraining with Shelby, to get them rideable and see what their skill level is, and then get them adopted out. So that's what we're doing, is getting them ready to be at that level, you know. And so we teach them to lead, pick their feet up, get them ready for the farrier, feed them, clean their stalls, clean the cobwebs off the stalls, sweep the shed rows, clean out the wash bay, jump in 130-gallon water tanks and dump them out, and to have water fights with the horses and spray them with water hoses and get in the mud and fall down and, you know, throw a lot of poop and go have lunch with your friends. And if that sounds interesting to you and like you're physically capable of doing it and building a a kinship and longtime friendship with like-minded individuals that have a passion for horses, come on over. If that sounds like it physically is too much for you and you'd like to come for a tour, come on over. Send us a message. I'll be happy to take you on a tour and show you around. If you want to just come for the volunteer nights and come for training and learn a little something and bring a dish with you or attend one of our events, we'd love to have you.
Well, there it is. The invitation is out there then for our listeners to join Equus Rescue and Rehabilitation in Millstadt, Illinois. Margo, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to join us here on the show.
Thank you, Stel. Glad to see you again and hope to see you all at the barn.
That wraps up this edition of the Metro Show. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm Stel Ponticus. Join us again next weekend for another edition of the Metro Show.